This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is House Agriculture Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Chairman Glenn Thompson next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Congressional agriculture leaders face an end of September deadline to write a new farm bill. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson has been a part of listening sessions in no less than 40 states gathering input from farm leaders. Thompson says the meetings have been very revealing.
Well, I've witnessed firsthand that clearly and how important that agriculture is as the number one industry in each of these states, and how it drives the economy, how it provides for jobs, how it contributes to a better environment, a better climate. To be able to witness that firsthand is incredibly important. And to be able to look at what is out there that is rather unique. There's a lot of commonalities in agriculture. There's no doubt about it. You know, we heard those in Tennessee, the importance of the safety net, you know, the need for robust trade, how just the evidence of American agriculture being, you know, grounded in science, technology, and innovation. So the importance of research, you know, the conservation programs that are effective when they're locally led and incentivized and voluntary. So a lot of things that are quite common, and that's been the benefit of this, obviously bringing the voices of American agriculture to the table here in Washington. I mean, I think one of the reasons that we have been overwhelmed with the input, both in the portal and what people have sent in writing, as we've prepared for this farm bill, I think we've really helped to generate, I think, the best body of input from American agriculture of how we've handled the past 2.5 years.
You have a very large committee, and you have a deadline. So what's your timeline now?
Yeah, I mean, we're vetting, obviously doing critical analysis on what we've received and what we've heard, and that process will continue. I think that will be more refined as we move through July and into August. My personal goal, is that, you know, the beginning of September, we're in a place when we're back here to be able to have a bill that we can mark up, and then soon after that, have that on the House floor. I can't control the Senate. We can only do our best. I can collaborate and communicate with the Senate, and we're doing that. Our staff are working well together. I couldn't ask for three better partners in terms of Senator Stabenow, Senator Bozeman, and Ranking Member Scott. In fact, Senator Stabenow and I will be having dinner when we're back. And we've developed a really good relationship. And that's important as we go forward, that we are communicating now so that there's not as much daylight between the Senate, the House version, and the Senate version on a farm bill, which will make us easier for getting our job done.
For all the pages and all the titles that are a part of the farm bill, how much of it is cut and paste?
Well, after thorough critical analysis, I would hope a significant portion will be, because the 2018 farm bill is seen as being one of the better farm bills. It's been very effective, tried and tested under some difficult circumstances, obviously. Nobody saw COVID coming, right?
Right.
I don't think any of us saw the trade disruption coming. And so those are some pretty tough circumstances. So some of it will be, and that's probably a good way to say it. All of it's going to get critical analysis, just to make sure that we don't miss an opportunity for refinement. But I think there's, What's the old adage? If it's not broken, don't fix it. And I think there would be some portions of the Farm Bill that would qualify under that category.
I would suppose that a Farm Bill listening sessions lately, farmers would have talked about the disparity in terms of the economic climate that they're operating in today, in 2023, as opposed to what the economic climate was in 2018, if nothing else from the input costs that they are enduring. There are plenty of calls for PLC reference prices to be increased. And you also heard from a number of young farmers who are tilling soils that are not base acres. And to raise reference prices and to adjust base acres, that could very well run into a pretty stiff price tag. How do you deal with issues like that, sir?
Well, you lean into them. Obviously, you've identified what we've heard as a common theme all over the country. And by leaning into it, I mean that, you know, our first responsibility here to begin with is to write the Farm Bill that American agriculture needs. Now, we'll have to put it through the filters of politics. I think we're navigating that really well. And we're also going to have to put it through the filter of, you know, financial resources. And, you know, for example, I was really pleased that Senator McConnell and Senator Bozeman did a listening session here, as you made reference to. And I know Senator McConnell made some statements about new spending will be hard to come by. You know, I fully agree with that. Quite frankly, I've been on this job long enough to know that it's never easy. It's never easy to do the right thing. So, yeah, I know Senator Stabenow is interested in looking at reprogramming some money. She's made some comments. Our budget chair and his committee are looking at, what can we gain and have available for investment if we move some of the ad hoc spending. And that was like $89 billion in ad hoc spending since the 2018 Farm Bill. None of it through the Farm Bill. It's all ad hoc. You know, if we institutionalized some of that into crop insurance and took the emotional element out of some of the disaster funding, which always adds extra dollars, because you do it in a rather quick and sometimes reckless way. There's some dollars there. So there's places that, that we need to look. You know, CBO and, we've done requests to the Congressional Budget Office and to the Department, USDA, for data, requests, and they need to obviously come back with in a very timely way and a more timely in turnaround for us to get the job done. And we're working through that right now.
I've been watching Farm Bills since the mid-80s, and one of the places that Farm Bill authors have been able to go in times past is rob money from conservation and to be able to use it in other areas of policy. Well, with the significance that we have on conservation today, I'm not sure that that's a possibility. Ms. Stabenow was able to secure some additional funds for existing conservation programs. So where are there pots or pools of money could you identify that you might be able to pull in and use in some of these other needed areas?
Well, we'll be in a better position to make that judgment when we get this data from both CBO and from the department. I don't want to shoot from the hip and do this blindly. I prefer to be data driven, good sound data as well. And so I think there's monies out there. I believe that there's monies out there. We'll see. This will be confirmed when we get this data back of monies that have been agriculture designated outside the Farm Bill that have not been by various pieces of legislation over the past 2 years that have not been spent. Some of that's been clawed back with the Debt Reduction Act, but not all of it. It was just a small portion. So there's additional dollars out there that could be reprogrammed. Yeah, conservation is so important, those programs. You know, that's probably the single largest part of what we do after nutrition. I think one of the last numbers I looked at showed that 5% of what we spend in conservation title, that's 5% of the Farm Bill. But it's incredibly important, right? It provides the tools to be able to help farmers deal with compliance issues, regulatory issues, but helps them also, you know, with the right kinds of investment, we help, these programs help them increase their yield, increase their productivity, as well as makes them, quite frankly, environmental and climate heroes with what, the benefits that they're able to bring about from an environmental perspective. Now we do have a new funding resource, that this will be the first Farm Bill cycle that it'll be, implemented with USDA, gets done putting kind of the regulatory, the implementation structure to it, and that's the Sustains Act. And that is a completely outside the box, no taxpayer dollars. This is investments, that quite frankly, corporations and individuals can make in the conservation programs by making a contribution to this public-private partnership. So, from all standpoints, it looks like the conservation program, and I think that's transformational, quite frankly. We achieved that at the end of the 117th Congress that was signed into law. And there's a lot of businesses and corporations that have made inquiries. They're very interested in earning their climate credentials. So I think was a transformational change, and I think that's a way to assure that conservation will remain robustly funded going forward.
About 2 years ago, I would have been caught from a podium shooting from the hip saying that I wonder if carbon sequestration, sustainable intensification wouldn't have played a larger role in the Farm Bill. I don't hear as much about that now, but do you think these ideas and concepts will find their way into the language somewhere?
Here's the thing. That's the outcome we're already producing. The American farmer are the climate heroes of the world. Now, I use farmer loosely. It's farmer, rancher, and forester, and processors. You can't have production without processing, you know, when it comes to agriculture. They're already getting the job done. Now, we'd like to provide them opportunities to be able to benefit from that. I think the Sustains Act helps that because there'll be more EQIP contracts to be able to be funded, and other types of conservation programs will reach further and more diversely. Carbon credit programs that really belongs in the, we provide some guidelines on that with legislation that we fixed that came from the Senate and President Biden signed here at the end of the 117th Congress. So it'll be interesting now to see how that takes off and whether that's as beneficial as the increased investment in those conservation tools farmers, ranchers, foresters will be able to benefit from. So my point being is farmers, the American farmer, and again, I use that term broadly, they're getting it done. And the more tools we can provide them, they'll do even better.
Freedom Caucus members weren't pleased with the debt ceiling spending compromise. And it is said that they are interested perhaps in the appropriation process of trimming spending even more. Can those fiscal conservatives get in the way of Farm Bill?
Well, I've got at least three members of the Freedom Caucus on the Agriculture Committee. I spent this past week with one of them in Tennessee for 3 days, and they are stalwart supporters of American agriculture, and quite frankly, they're stalwart supporters of what the American farmer needs, what Americans need. When you think that the fact that we spend less than 2% of what we spend, because if their concern is financial, right? And I believe when spokespersons for those speaking on behalf of the Freedom Caucus, they talk about their concern as fiscal responsibility. What we fund under the Farm Bill is less than 2% of the overall spending of this nation. And the return on investment is amazing, right? It's the number of jobs across this country, the number of economic impact, the number of taxes that are generated from those enterprises, the amount of nutrition and food security that this nation has, more stronger than anywhere else in the world. And quite frankly, the positive impact on the environment and the climate. So if you're truly I consider myself a fiscal conservative. I am a conservative Republican. That's just who I am. I think the Farm Bill is the poster child for return on investment of for taxpayers. And there's no better return on investment in anything else that we spend on in this country. So, you know, members are going to do what members do. But I'm feeling very positive that this will be a robust, bipartisan, bicameral, on time and highly effective farm bill.
Chairwoman Stabenow says that the work issues for nutrition are over. You and I've talked about this before. What's left that could bring nutrition back to the table in the House Ag Committee debate? Is it about saving money, or is it about serving those who are in need?
It is about four things, four principles that I defined when I became ranking member for the nutrition title. So the first principle is innovation. What are the innovations out there with technology today that would help us with our nutrition programs to be more efficient and more effective, more fraud-proof too? Number two, it's not just food security, it's financial security. And the Farm Bill Nutrition Title has been that way since the 1990s, I think 1993. And quite frankly, we've codified that in the Debt Reduction Act. It is now law that the nutrition title is about not just food security, but financial security. And then the third principle is program integrity. And then finally, it's about healthy eating. There's nothing more fundamental building block to health and wellness than good food. So we're looking at, for example, we're looking at the Thrifty Food Plan through this lens, among other areas. I think we've accomplished some really significant improvements through the Debt Reduction Act. But I don't think we'd be doing our job if we just said, we're not going to look at any further to nutrition title. Well, that's not right. I don't think we'd be doing our due diligence if at this point we just threw up our hands and said, we're not doing anything else in Title IV. You know, we're not going to look at Title IV. We're not going to continue to do the critical analysis of Title IV. And the things that we do will be through the lens of those four principles.
It's not in the Farm Bill, but yet you are leaning in on an issue that so many farm groups are talking about, and that's adequate workers to get the job of agriculture done. What do you hope from the group of lawmakers that you've brought together to look at this issue, and you've given them a timeline?
Yeah, timelines are important around here. Deadlines make us effective, right? People complain that we go right up to the deadline, but at least deadlines make us get our job done. And that's why I could have formed this task force and said, no particular timeline, we'll get to the end when we get to the end. I think that would have been a huge mistake. So right off from the very beginning when I talked about this, I said 6 months. Really proud of the members who volunteered from the Agriculture Committee to serve on this. We have what gets published says that there's 14, 8, 7, and 7, 7 Republicans, 7 Democrats. I was very purposeful in that because I think this, unlike, you know, committees and subcommittees, which when you're in a majority, you have a few more members. This is not going to be a legislating task force. This task force is not legislating. And the other thing is we're going to have two co-chairs. I'm really proud of the people that have agreed to serve in that capacity. We have a Republican, Rick Crawford from Arkansas, a great friend, good member. And we have a new friend, a freshman Democrat from North Carolina, Don Davis, and he will be a co-chair of this. So we have two co-chairs, and that's the attitude of which we're approaching this. What are we hoping to get from it? Well, I'm hoping about halfway through we get an interim report from this group that talks about what they've learned in terms of what are the variables that are impacting the uncertainty when it comes to agriculture workforce. Now, that's both production and processing, because you can't have one without the other. And also, at the interim report, I want to hear what are the implications for food insecurity, because that'll be the basis, the banner of which we look for remedies. You know, as those 6 months that are there or in that area comes to a close, then I want a final report of what can we do about it. What should be included in some type of a legislative vehicle? We're not going to write that law with this task force. So we'll take all that information, or work with my staff, we'll do some critical analysis, and put together a bill that, quite frankly, as many of the 53 members of the House Agriculture Committee can get behind, as well as the agriculture community, the industry as a whole. And then we'll need to have to sell it. The Judiciary Committee, and I respect, Congressman Jim Jordan does a great job leading the Judiciary Committee, this traditionally has been where the parliamentarian assigns this type of legislation. But it's not really looking at citizenship. It's not looking at the border. There's other efforts going on there that needs to be done. I'm fully supportive. This is about food insecurity, the risk of it, and how we prevent that.
Mr. Chairman, the Supreme Court did not throw off California's Proposition 12 for the raising of hogs, left it to the Congress, saying it was Congress that had the authority to make change. Is that an issue that you think will come before this body, before Prop 12 is implemented with California and the rest of the country?
But I feel very strongly that will be a part of the Farm Bill addressing this. You know, interstate commerce is regulated from a federal, constitutionally, from a federal perspective. I thought, as I've read through the comments that the justices issued in opinions on this, there's two of the most conservative ones who voted, not really to address Prop 12, but their perspective was at least my interpretation is Congress has given up way too much of its authority, both to the executive branch and to the courts. And this is an issue that Congress needs to address. I think we're well practiced with this from the days of Steve King and Jeff Denham in the 2014 Farm Bill and the 2018 Farm Bill, the great egg war, as I affectionately recall it. I think this could be the year and the Farm Bill where we make it very clear. This is such a slippery slope, and why the interstate commerce was put into the Constitution by the founders is they didn't want trade wars among states. And that's why interstate commerce was placed at the federal level. I believe it was Justice Kavanaugh that more or less suggested that, Congress and the Farm Bill may be the most appropriate place to address this. And I would agree with that.
Chairman Thompson, from having the opportunity to talk to so many farmers who've had the chance to meet you, to be a part of listening sessions, such tremendous respect with which you have shouldered and are shouldering the task of writing this new Farm Bill and working with your fellow leaders. Thank you for your effort. Thank you for your time to give us an update on this particular policy, and we certainly are hopeful that you find success as you work together for the 23 bill. Thanks for being here. It is open mic, and today, sir, you get the last word.
Well, I just want to say thank you to the folks who put together this last listening session, and we have more scheduled. Connecticut, Maine, Missouri, back to Minnesota. There's lots more. Even as we begin to write, more places to go. Big thank you to Congressman John Rose and Congressman Scott Desjarlais for hosting me for a number of days in Tennessee. It was a pretty intense schedule with our visits. I really appreciate Ag Commissioner Hatcher and Farm Bureau President Mayberry. What a privilege, and thanks to them. And they finished on an up note for me last night. It was my first visit to the Grand Ole Opry, and to be able to be there and hear John Conley and the Isaacs and many other performers. Right? That was that's rural America. A big thank you to all the folks in Tennessee for their hospitality.
Our thanks to House Agriculture Committee Chair Glenn Thompson, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.